Okay, everybody. Well, welcome to the latest Dave Good Show. Perhaps it's a little weird for me to say this is the latest Dave Good Show because I guess maybe, as far as you know, there's only been three of them, or maybe you saw some of my video blogs before I really knew what a video blog was. I've done a lot of things that I thought were authentic, and now kind of people around the world are doing them. But I guess I thought I'd start with a little bit of background about myself. It's hard for me to know where to start. I mean, I think a good function of this show is going to kind of be parsing out my story with the media industry. I mean, I really have a long saga of kind of being on the periphery of the media industry and almost breaking in at various points, but then always feeling like I had to compromise my ideals to make it, or whatever that means. But I mean, from a very early age, I was obsessed with 2020. I think around the age of 11, I never missed a 2020 until I was, I don't know, in high school, until I discovered beer and girls and things like that. I mean, I saw every episode of 2020, and I became a history major. I majored in history. Then I realized that the deeper you get into history, you end up finding that you don't really ever know the answers to any questions. And anyways, documentaries came after that. I did get a degree in media literacy, which I thought was like the next big and up and coming academic area. And of course, no one even knows what it is or ever talks about it. And eventually I did win the Walter Cronkite Scholarship for Journalism from the Television Academy. This did happen to me. You might not know it by the way that I'm speaking, but it was true.
We're still in a deep state of shock.
That was right around the time of 9/11. And I think that when I got that award, which was the Emmys, where everyone's kind of celebrating their 9/11 coverage, which in itself was very strange. When I got that award, I had this weird feeling that that was a begin, or that was an ending rather than the beginning. Like, I got this big scholarship and I got this big check, and I felt like my time in the media was coming to a close. I mean, it was. The culture was changing. I mean, the time, I don't know if you remember what that was like, but the time right after 9/11 was when everyone shut up and quit doing in-depth coverage and just kind of lined up behind the government. And yeah.
I'm sorry, I want to jump in right away. I have to say that my 9/11 experience was really strange. It was the first day of college for me, and I walked down to the break room, or whatever it's called, in the dorm, and, you know, everyone was just emotionally, like, distraught, and I was flipping through the channels, and everything was 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, and then I got to channel 24, which, though Northfield is ESPN, and they literally were running, "Is Michael Jordan coming back?"
Oh, yeah, okay.
And to me, you know, growing up in Minnesota, not knowing a whole lot, people who lived in New York at that time, that was my 9/11 moment. And I've always thought that it's just the most perverse but perfect thing for me for 9/11, because it was just like distance and somehow cohesion with my like mind space at the time. And that to me is what journalism was at 9/11. It was like VH1, it was more important to show Jeff Buckley singing Hallelujah while the buildings fell down. And then ESPN was like, well, there's not really a sports angle, so it's front Jordan. And like, to me, that was probably where cynicism was approved, you know, like where it was okay to actually not care about people's lives.
I think that's a very valid point. And I mean, I like that ESPN is somehow connected to like your core of cynical moments, because I myself have had lots of issues with cynicism and ESPN and sports coverage. But to get back to my story, which is good that you interrupted. I mean, basically, I was in a situation where I felt like the problem with me getting my story out was that I was letting too many other people get involved. Because that's always been my story, is that I develop a project, a movie, a podcast, whatever, and I start to bring it up the chain, and then eventually I get involved with some ruthless people and it seems to disintegrate. But so I started doing all this work myself, which was just me talking, and I realized that I kind of missed out on a huge component, that really kind of what I learn and who I am and what I do is through my conversations with other people. And the person that you may or may not have heard jump in right there, depending on how we edit this later, is Lucas Koski, who does a lot of cool things. I mean, I just consider him to be like a doer, you know, and these people, there's people who just talk about it and there's people who do it, and Lucas does it, and I want to have some doers on my show, some artists, and, you know, offer our perspective on current events, which, like I said, I've always done. I always have thought about Like, whenever I'm reading the news, I'm always like, how can I distill this into some sound bites which will wake the people up from their sleep or whatever delusions of grandeur I might have? Well, it's good. I mean, I am really happy that I smoked. I feel like I smoked just as many cigarettes as I needed to smoke to get this voice. That I could always tell there was something that wasn't quite right about, like, the way that I sang and that I talked. And then I discovered cigarettes, and I was like, oh, this is the problem. It just cut some of the sweetness a little bit. So now I just, anyways, yeah, I mean my sweet voice. But, okay, well, so I have this story, which I think is the right lead-in for this podcast. Do you want to hear this story? Okay. I went and I saw the comedian Marc Maron, who has a very famous podcast, which I have never listened to. I listened to just a little bit of it for the first time the other day. And his opening story was kind of this story that I'm about to tell you, which is that so Marc Maron performed at the Mall of America, right? He got up and right away he was started talking about the death of consumer capitalism, right? And he was like, I'm in this mall and there's nobody here. And why are the stores crying was his joke. And like that empty roller coaster is the, you know, testament to our crumbling foundation. And he basically, this whole monologue, which to be clear, I thought was good, was based on the lack of attendance at the mall. Now, Lucas, just wait. I'm getting to the crux of this, and then you can jump in and talk as long as you want. So what he says is, you know, it was just the whole thing. Why is nobody at the mall? Why is nobody at the mall? You know, and he can't believe it. And what he doesn't realize is that that weekend was the first weekend that it was above zero in like 6 weeks. And so he's coming from California, and I even saw him, you know, he's all bundled up and it's 25 degrees outside and he thinks what a perfect day to go to the mall. But doesn't realize that like this day, no one's at the mall because it's 25 degrees outside. We're all like in our sweatshirts walking our dogs around the lake. And so what it made me think was, and it's interesting, this is, I mean, I liked Marc Maron's stuff and I mean, I think he's a bright guy, but he kind of represents in some way to me this coastal liberal intellectual who is onto this great point, but then he blows his point by missing some key aspect of Midwestern life. Like, this is all based on why is there no one at the mall? And like, there was no Minnesotans at the mall that day. The only people at the mall were people dumb enough to go on vacation to the Mall of America in February. Those are the people who are at the mall. So, I mean, that's kind of what I feel like I'm interested in. I mean, don't you feel like, as a Midwesterner, you're kind of always being misunderstood by coastal intellectual.
I would say misunderstood is the wrong word, because it's more about a frame of reference and a culture. When people in Boston have a 20-inch snowstorm, I think there's a slight shift of what that means. It's like, I think people on the coast tend to think of it as like this awful thing, and that people in the Midwest seem to think of it as this like inevitable thing, and that the inevitable nature of it means that you have to take advantage of certain things. And so that, you know, when you have that 20 degree day after 5 weeks of not being above 10, then it's an opportunity, as opposed to like, oh, now it's warm enough to go to the mall. It's like, there's a certain amount of extreme shifting that goes on in the Midwest that most people, like you said, don't get, because it doesn't seem extreme. You know, it seems like really like howdy-doody, but really it's like it's allowing the seasons to change the way that you dress, the way that you think, the way that you act, and being open to the fact that these weather elements are a really big part of how you feel and how you act. And I don't think that exists on the coast as much.
Here's what I kind of got out of that Marc Maron statement was that if someone say, I mean, I guess, you know, I should give more context of the show. I mean, he has these kind of scathing commentary about the Tea Party and about, you know, the rural uneducated Americans. And even though he was right about what he was saying, or that he was, I don't know, onto something about the potential death of our consumer capitalist mentality, it was totally null and void because the premise was flawed. Like, he missed the whole premise. It was like a misunderstanding of the weather that then caused everything he said to be easily called into question. Does that make sense?
It does. What does I want to know, sense, though, is
my favorite thing to say.
What is your favorite thing to say?
Does that make sense?
Oh, then no, it doesn't. But what I wanted to know is what at what point did you realize that he didn't understand? Because I think that's something that's to me, as like a person who identifies with Minnesota more than with America, is that there's a certain element of once someone doesn't understand, you just stop trying to explain, you know?
Right.
And I think
right.
when you're listening to someone who you're like, oh, he's saying something smart, he's saying something intelligent, and then you realize he doesn't get it, it's not like you're writing them off, but you're just kind of like, well, you'd have to be immersed in the culture for a while. Or like, I think the same thing happens when people talk about, it's like, well, why are you doing art in the Midwest? Don't you, you know, want to move to New York? And it's like, no, you don't get it. Like, my art's for the Midwest. And people don't understand that there's not a better, you know? Like,
right, definitely.
Which doesn't really have anything to do with Mark Maron. And I,
right. No, I mean, and I think that, you know, honestly, I thought it was a good idea to bring up Mark Maron because then I could tag the podcast Mark Maron, right? I could be like, we talk about Mark Maron, and then that'll be a good way, like, all kinds of people will.
The Sound of Young America.
The Sound of Young America?
Yeah.
Is that a podcast?
That's a podcast as okay. well. It's award-winning. It's actually the youngest mainstream radio producer to do, like, a nationwide thing. It was pretty interesting.
Oh, well, I mean, that's all. I mean, I still, like, in my head, I'm still doing radio. Like, I still feel like I'm doing radio, even though, I mean, I don't really listen to a lot of podcasts because I don't really have the time. I'm too busy reading.
Shoveling snow.
About the news, shoveling snow. Well, and I don't have a job that allows me to listen to podcasts while I'm at work. I mean, one thing I do wonder, or one thing I'm nostalgic for, is the things that we used to do to waste time before the internet. Like, before there was the internet to waste time, we, like, came up with a game, and we threw a ball into a wastebasket, and we kept score, and we had a great championship.
I can throw a ball into the wastebasket on my phone now, though.
Oh, right.
So I don't actually have to use waste like you do.
Right. I know. I mean, that's...
I don't cut trees down. I just mine silicon.
Right. Oh. Which phones are awesome for the environment. I mean, they really are like a beautiful thing to have everyone get this disposable thing.
I eventually want to come back to Mark Maron, but I've read that Apple is like in the top three. This was like 3 years ago, but that Apple was in the top three most like harmful environmental companies because their battery life is so short and that they end up throwing away tons and tons of batteries. And then their goal for even more than PCs, their goal is to have people not recycle, but to upgrade their products constantly. And so that the amount of like raw, rare materials that are thrown away by Apple products is like insanely high.
Oh, no, I believe that. I mean, there's a whole, I mean, yes, I believe that and that's true. I don't need to add to that. But going back to, that's true. That's the gospel truth. That's heard on the Dave Good Show. So back to the being a Midwestern artist subject, you know, so we can have some kind of coherent thread going through this. So I moved here from Portland, Oregon, right? I moved here from the place where, you know, quote unquote, young people go to retire. And before, as I was in the process of moving to Minneapolis, all of these West Coast people were asking me, what's Minneapolis like or why are you moving there? And I'm like, well, it's kind of a similar place. It's a progressive city. You know, Prince is from there. And they'd be like, oh, wow, Prince is from there. That's awesome. I'd say Target's from there, and they'd say, oh, I love Target. You know, that was like really gave us a lot of cred. And so I said, and I knew a lot of people who worked at museums and a lot of creative people, and I'm going there to kind of further my artistic development. And all of that went along fine. And then maybe a week or two later, I had a group of people approach me. They were people who worked for me at the movie theater, I mean, in their early 20s. And they said, we've been talking about Minneapolis, and we don't believe you. Right? They're like, look, we've never heard of this place. It looks like it's in this weird spot of the country. Like, we don't believe you that it's cool. And what's amazing, I say, have you ever been to Minnesota? Oh, no, I haven't been anywhere. I mean, this is my brother's joke, but people in Portland, they've all been to Southeast Asia, but they've never been to Idaho.
Yeah.
You know, let alone Iowa or Minnesota.
I've never been to Iowa. Or Idaho, for that matter.
You're missing out. I've been to both Idaho and Iowa. And as an Iowan, when you go to Idaho, we do have a bond because we're called the other one so often that we feel like we have like a similar joke about it. We're like, oh yeah, Iowa. People often think I'm from there.
I want to know if you think, and this is almost related, is there another state or what state besides Minnesota is more often geographically misplaced by people on the coast? Because I have literally been asked Like, if I like in living on the West Coast when I've been on the East Coast, when I tell people I'm from Minnesota, and I've been asked, like, in Seattle, if I really spent a lot of time in Denver, and I've been asked, like, when I've been down south, the Northeast was like.
Right.
And, like, not people not understanding, like, 3/4 of this country that kind of surrounds the state of Minnesota and how it's not near any of these other things.
Right, I know. I mean, and I just think that's really important. I think it's one of the number one things that, you know, the average New Yorker or Californian does not understand, that, like, their basic lack of knowledge of geography makes it difficult for, say, the common person to get on board with their ideas, you know, to be like, oh, there's this great idea coming out of California and we're sending it to Iowa, and they don't think there's a difference between Iowa and Arkansas.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's a huge deal. And culturally, they're radically different. I mean, culturally, there's a pretty big difference between Iowa and Minnesota. I mean, it's, you know, more similar than other places. But no, when I would say I'm from Iowa, they would say, first of all, they go, now, where is that? You know, like, I just said the most adorable thing they've ever heard. Like, now, oh, that is cute. Where is Iowa?
Yeah.
And I, you know, start to explain it. It's between the Missouri and the Mississippi River. They'd realize those were two different rivers, you know, in that moment. And then
they're also states.
They're also states. And then they would say, is that the head of the man?
I don't have idea what that
right,
means.
Right, I know, right? Is that the head of the man? And then I'd look at them like, I don't know. I mean, I think some of us are involved with the man, you know, but no, that they have this, like, Minnesota is the hat, and that hat sits on top of Iowa, which is like a head because it's got a little nose that sticks out. Uh-huh. And then, like, Missouri is the body.
What geography? Why would this? I'm amazed that people are spending this much time looking at the central of America.
Right.
But how is this useful in any way?
Well, no, the point is that they, you know, they have no kind of relationship. Well, then as an Iowan, we are totally, you know, in response to this, I feel like we're like, we know every single state, we know every capital, we know where it is, just to, you know, to bolster our inferiority complex, which comes from people not knowing that it's there. But, and then also, I mean, my friends, I have good friends in the Midwest who, like I said, these people who are like, we don't believe you that Minneapolis is a cool and progressive city, that I think politically that has a lot to say about kind of what's wrong with this picture. You know, like, here you go, you live in Portland, Oregon, and there's a place called Minnesota that's produced, you know, Paul Wellstone and, you know, or
Gene McCarthy.
Right. I mean, I don't want to get into great Minnesotans because I don't really know that many, but I can talk a lot about great Iowans. Regardless, like, we've contributed to the country on a profound scale, and there's no recognition of it. George Washington Carver went to Iowa State.
Not from Iowa, though.
No, not born in Iowa.
Which matters. I can name a lot of people who went to the University of Minnesota who are not from
Iowa. Right. Well, Minnesota. I mean, it's true. I can think of a lot of people who passed through Iowa.
I would say Fred Hoiberg.
Yeah, well, Fred ACT. Hoiberg, of course. Yeah, we invented the ACT. We invented the Iowa Test of Basic Skills. That's not a person, you know.
I'm stuck after
frickin'
that.
Frickin' Herbert Hoover, unfortunately.
Oh, is he? Yeah, that's right. He is from Iowa.
Herbert Hoover's an Iowan.
Radar, I think, is from
Iowa. Yes. The fictional character Radar, who played both, the only person who played himself in both the movie and the show.
Okay, that's impressive.
That's pretty impressive.
The guy that won the Medal of Honor is from Iowa.
The guy.
Yeah, I know him. His name. Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, really?
Is an Iowan.
So this list is just pathetic.
I don't think I want to include Ashton Kutcher.
I have this really weird thing where I just, like, want to crap on every state that's next to Minnesota. Like, right. I have this thing where I don't like going to Chicago.
Right.
It's a great city. It's like 7 hours away, and I hate it. Like, I'll never go to Chicago. When people, you know, diss on where you're from or whatever, you do kind of develop this, like, us versus them mentality.
Sure.
And there's certainly an amount of that involved, but I just keep going back in this conversation to my favorite Atmosphere quote, which is a local hip-hop band from Minneapolis, and it's, I don't know why it sticks with me, but I just feel like it perfectly embodies the way I feel about other people's responses to Minnesota. And the line's really simple. It's it sucks that you think where I'm from is whack, but as long as it's enough to keep your ass from coming back. And that to me is, like, the perfect embodiment of both, like, Minnesota nice and that flip side that everyone knows and loves, like that kind of weird, like, passive aggressive, really cold, you know, I'll tell you I'll tell you how to get to the hospital, but I'm not going to let you inside my house.
Right, kind of right, thing. Exactly. I help you build that thing, but I will not touch you under any circumstances.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just think that for me, that it really embodies the way I feel about the Midwest, and specifically Minnesota in particular, is that, you know, it's unfortunate. This goes back to Mark Maron. It's unfortunate that you don't get it, but if you don't get it, please don't come around.
No, it's true. I think the reason I can't rattle off the list of famous Iowans, you know, oh, Sean Johnson, there's another huge big time.
Who's Iowan. That?
That's the Olympic gymnast that won both the gold medal and Dancing with the Stars. And
was this recent?
This is recent, yeah. I mean, she was like huge.
Oh, is she?
Huge news in Iowa. I mean, when my grandma calls me about the Olympics, she was like, how many Minnesotans are in the Olympics? And then lists off the Iowans, you know?
Oh,
like,
wow. She's like, nice.
And it's a similar situation. I mean, I have to say, ultimately, I wish things were not that way. I mean, I wish we could communicate better. I mean, I think that when I hear...
But why?
You know,
why? What's wrong with regional differences? I mean, my least favorite thing about America in the last 40 years is that we have lost our dialects. I think there's something... like look at England. No, that island's, I have no idea how big it actually is. It's probably the size of Massachusetts, maybe smaller, maybe bigger. I don't know. I wish I did. But the coolest thing about that is like 20 miles over a dale. That's what they say over there, right? 20 miles over a hill or a dale, it's a totally different accent. I'm like, I think that's so cool. And I don't understand why we decided to homogenize. And so I for one, you know, welcome differences.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm all for difference. I mean, I still wish we could communicate more effectively because I think there's a lot of societal ills that break down to communication issues.
Do you think, Dave, that there's a specific Iowa accent?
I mean, definitely versus Minnesota. I mean, Iowans are kind of known for not having an accent. It's a good place to be from if you want to get into television news.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did actually build the local news format that all goes back to Iowa television. That's the first, all the like action news, having the weatherman stand and like building the entire newscast around the weather. That's how life is in Iowa. Like the local news is actually relevant and the weather actually matters. And so they've like imported that to everyone else where local news is not relevant and the weather does not matter, but they still.
Who has the first all color television news program? KSDP, Minneapolis.
I bet it was all color and all white.
Okay.
I got some to give a little perspective to this. I've got some Minnesota talking that I came up with.
Oh, good. I love it.
Okay, so I went to an open mic, right? I'm contemplating stand up, and so I went to an open mic to kind of like check out the scene.
Did you go to the corner bar?
I did not go to the corner bar, but that's where I'm hoping to debut someday, you know, terrified and inebriated. But I'm watching this stand-up, this like amateur stand-up, and I mean, it's not very good, and a lot of it is kind of offensive. I mean, I'm not saying I care if I'm being offended, because I mean, stand-up comedy is all about, you know, it's a free space. Yeah,
cheap laugh,
though. Yeah, it's a cheap laugh, but it was kind of funny. I mean, the default joke was when people were bombing was always like, oh, and Iowa, you know, it was always like, and Iowa's a piece of shit at the end, you know,
yeah,
it was just like
exactly.
Always defaulted to Iowa. And I actually think most Minnesota jokes about Iowa are not good jokes, like on the definition of joke. But I guess I have an option. There's like the joke that I kind of wrote about Minnesota, or there's the joke that I know about Minnesota. I mean, which one do you want to hear?
I want to do the one that you wrote first.
Okay, well... the joke that I wrote is that I was looking on it's an excellent blog, by the way, the OKCupid Trends blog. Okay, and what that is, for those of you who don't know, OKCupid's like a hipster dating website, and they're in all these different urban areas, and they get all this data, you know, all of these, from all the profiles, there are like 500,000 people on OKCupid, and so then they do all this data mining, and then they come up with trends like, what do, you know, white people from New Jersey think about dating versus what do African Americans from Georgia think about dating, et cetera, right?
Probably pretty much the same.
Yeah, identical.
Almost the same culture.
Right, almost the same culture. So they have these like color-coded maps, okay? And first of all, I want to say that, it was funny reading a color-coded map that's red and green because 8% of dudes cannot read that map. you know, which is what it's I want okay, to write.
Okay, take your Cupid.
Right, but I had to like continue to read. Okay, but there's so there's these color coded maps, right? And one of them is how often do you shower? Okay, and on one side of the graph, like the green is once a day, and then the red is some days. Okay. And so Minnesota, profoundly red, like in terms of red versus green versus showers, Minnesota is a red state, being like a shower. We just shower. Excuse me. Minnesotans just shower some days.
Mm-hmm.
Also, how often do you like to have sex? Once a day, being very, very green. Once a week, being very, very red. Okay. Minnesota, also incredibly red. So I'm just like, oh, what a sexy place to be here. All these dirty people that don't like to... Because it is terrible dating in Minnesota. I mean, I should give that context. Like this, I think, is a difficult for non-Minnesotans. The most thing they experience here, due to the reserved nature and like the lack of hugging and touching, is that the dating rituals, I think, are very complicated.
Well, first, don't shower, and then don't expect to be touched.
Right.
So you should. I think that's pretty clear, actually.
Right. Right. Don't shower and don't expect to be touched. Or why shower if you're not going to be touched?
No. Culturally, I don't think you're understanding the significance.
Okay, okay.
No, I have nothing on that. Is that the joke,
though? I mean, that's essentially the joke. Oh. I mean, there's more.
I was expecting, you know.
There's like a punchline that I've come up with, but I've found it to be something that like men think is a very funny punchline, and women, it makes them like throw up in their mouth.
So let's do the other joke, though.
The other joke is a guy walks into a bar, and above the bar, there's a sign that says 10-cent martinis. And he thinks to himself, that's just weird, you know, but I guess I'll get one. So he asks the bartender, you know, hey, I'll take one of those martinis. And he gets his 10-cent martini and he takes a drink and it's amazing. Like, it's the greatest martini he's ever had. And he says to the bartender, I don't understand why this martini is so good. Like, how can you make such a good martini for 10 cents? Well, the bartender says, the thing is, I'm independently wealthy and I actually just really love martinis. So I've just opened this bar to like share my love of the martini with the world. You know, I don't care if I make any money or not. And then the guy drinking the martini looks over and there's two people sitting at a table and they're not drinking at all. And he asks the bartender, like, hey, how come those guys aren't drinking? He says, oh, they're from Minnesota. They're waiting for happy hour.
See, that's good. I like that. But I think one of the, yeah.
And it's true. No one loves happy hour like a Minnesotan. Like, there's nothing a Minnesotan loves more than a half-price appetizer and a $3 pint of beer. They build their entire social lives around it. I mean, it was hard because I was working at night and I'd get up at like noon and then everyone would be wasted at 5 o'clock. And sometimes I get drunk and be like, wait, I've only been up for 4 hours. I shouldn't be wasted right now.
I don't know if it's a Scandinavian base or if it's the weather or if it's the isolation or if it's just a straight depression, which is probably a combination of all those four. But the upper Midwest knows how to drink. And it's something... That's unlike, no, I would say the South, like some aspects, especially like college type, like frat-ish South has a strong reputation in drinking, but it's different. It's like, I think Minnesotans just, you're like, oh, it's 8 o'clock. I'm schwilly.
Yeah.
Watch the news and go to bed.
You've been listening to The Dave Good Show.
That is true.